It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. Live it off the wall. Where you give the best sports talk and info in New York.
I got a special treat for you this evening. A young man that you all know is Joe the Policeman from the What's Going Down episode of That's My Mama. I want you to put your hands together and welcome him to the stage. Big round of applause for Jackson Heights' own
Mr. Chris Shan.
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Shan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. I, of course, am the heavily caffeinated Chris Shearn, the host of Yankees Batting Practice today, and the Yes Network Sports Sprint on the Yes Network, by the way, for all of you who couldn't put two and two together. Hello. Joe Auriemma will join us in just a couple of brief minutes, but first, let's get down to business. Now, this was going to be a pretty... I don't want to say slow podcast, but it was going to be your basic run-of-the-mill, hey, let's take a look at the Yankees and their injury situation. They are entering a very, very tricky part of their schedule. The rest of the month of May is not friendly to the Yankees. We're going to push that to the back burner, along with the two idiots that ran onto the field in Philadelphia. I blogged about this earlier in the week, and Joe and I will shed some light on that, but we got to start. First of all, we'll start by saying if you want to get involved in the podcast, call 646-487-3668, or you can email us at offthewall@yesnetwork.com. We did get some phone calls, and we will use them in our next segment. A couple of great phone calls, and one from the great state of North Carolina, but more on that a bit later. First, we have to start today's podcast, this week's podcast, with Lawrence Taylor and the news about him that's now trickling out as the day goes on. He's being charged with rape in the third degree as defined by Ramapo Police Chief Peter Brower, is someone 21 years or older engaging in sexual intercourse with someone under 17. He's also being charged with patronizing a prostitute in the third degree, and that is someone over 21 with a prostitute who is under 17. Now, the first charge, the rape in the third degree, is a Class E felony, and the term in jail, the maximum term in jail, would be 4 years. Lawrence, what are you doing? What are you doing? A couple weeks ago, he was at the draft in New York. He was there with his lovely wife, and he was talking to Ian O'Connor of ESPNNewYork.com. And he asked him about if he watches football. He says, I don't watch it anymore. I'd rather see two chickens defecate, he didn't use that word though, in the woods than watch a football game. So he's having a great time. He's at the draft. He's with his wife. Everything's great. 2 weeks later, he gets caught in New York with an underage prostitute. He's 51 years old, everybody. He's 51. He's not 23. He's not a rookie in the league. LT, you've been around the block. Lord knows you've been around the block. We all know you have. And you were the king of transgressions before Tiger Woods came along. But you know what? As long as you kept second quarterbacks, no one really cared what you did off the field. But then when you stopped playing, things kept going. The transgressions kept mounting up. But the ones before, although they were horrendous, pale in comparison to what you're being charged for now. Does it make you scratch your head? Absolutely it does. Absolutely. But does it shock you? Didn't shock me. Didn't shock me. You know this guy, over the course of time, whether he was on the field or he was done and he was off the field, has done some pretty stupid things. But this takes the taco. This is the dumbest. There is a little something wrong with this story, though. And this is how I'm going to bring in Joe into the conversation. And we were just watching the press conference that took place today. And the police chief, Peter Brower, said the victim went missing in March. Now, the way the story goes, Joe, why don't you break it down for us and then we'll start discussing this together.
Okay, so basically what Christopher St. Lawrence, the police commissioner in Ramapo, in Rockland County, New York, is saying that Lawrence Taylor was at a Holiday Inn and he apparently called Rashid Davis, who is a pimp, in New York City. Davis drove the girl, the 16-year-old girl, who had been staying with him in the Bronx, to this Holiday Inn and told her that he had told her that she had to have sex with Lawrence Taylor. When she refused, he struck the girl with his fist, kicked her, and then brought her to the Holiday Inn, and she still didn't want to go.
Right.
Apparently, she claims that Taylor sexually assaulted her, gave her $300, and then she went on her way with Davis. On the way back
This is where it gets tricky.
Yeah. On the way back from the hotel, she's apparently been missing since March.
Right.
Yet she had the wherewithal to... Now, I'm not saying that, you know, this didn't happen. This isn't a travesty, but this is a little...
No, Lawrence Taylor's stupid. That's the common denominator here.
But on the way back, she texted her uncle, who then went to the New York City Police Department, and the New York City Police Department detained both the 16-year-old girl and Rashid Davis. And in conjunction with the Ramapo Police Department, they went to the Holiday Inn at 3:55 this morning and arrested Lawrence Taylor.
All right, this is directly from the Ramapo Police. So we talked about this before we started taping this. This doesn't compute, because if you're missing since March.
It's 2 months.
And you have this entire time, if you have 2 months' time to text your uncle and say this pimp has me, you know, under his control and making me do things, why did you wait until you got sexually assaulted by Lawrence Taylor to text your uncle? Why didn't you text your uncle on your way to Ramapo?
Or how about in March?
I'm not saying, listen, before this gets misconstrued, I am not saying...
This is a very bad situation.
I am not saying the girl is at fault here, okay? I have a daughter, and if anything like this were to happen to her, I would go completely nuts. Okay? I'm not saying it's her fault. But I find it very odd that she would wait until this happened, until she got one of her family members involved to come make this right.
And the other thing is, over the last 2 months... has any other situation like this happened where she's, you know, she's obviously living with this pimp in the Bronx. So, I mean, is this the first situation that has happened?
Has been breaking all day. At first she was 15, now she's 16. At first everybody thought LT punched her in the face. Now we found out the pimp punched her in the face. So there's going to be so much more that comes out of this. I mean, this is just scratching the surface. We don't know if they told Lawrence Taylor she was 18, and...
Well, he's now, his attorney, Kenneth Gribbets, is said that they are confident Taylor's innocence will be proven. I don't know how that's going to happen, but by the same token, I already, you know, a question was asked to, you know, the chief of police in Ramapo during the press conference where they said, well, what if LT... you know, plays ignorant. And he said, you know, you can't play ignorant in a situation you need to know. By the same token, I mean, he is dealing with, you know, it was a stupid situation. He's calling for a prostitute. But, you know, he's going to try to play the ignorant card. I didn't ID the girl. I didn't know that I trusted this guy, said she was 18. That's probably where this is going. In my mind.
Well, I don't know.
It's a horrible situation. It's terrible that this has happened. It's just one in a long line of many instances that Lawrence Taylor has had, not only during his playing career,
but
after his playing career.
And it's kind of like art imitating life, Joe. He was in the movie Any Given Sunday, and when they were telling him his career might be over, he was like, football's all I know. What am I going to do when football's over?
Yeah.
It's almost like he wasn't acting in that movie. That was him.
Yeah, and it's a real shame because, you know, LT does have a family. And
he does.
You know, he's tried to clean up his act since the 1996 incident where he was arrested for, you know, trying to buy $100 worth of crack. You know, and then he's had some instances since then. But, you know, it's sad. It's really
it
sad.
It is. This is sad.
This is, you know, you and I grew up with LT. This is one of the greatest football players that I've ever seen play in my lifetime. And he was really, like he said, well, let's go out there like a bunch of crazed dogs.
And have some fun.
Yeah, well, his life.
That doesn't translate to off the field.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's what he does off the field as well. And this one's going to come back and bite him.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
should.
They're saying that he could get up to 4 years in prison. I mean, that's a hefty prison sentence.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know what? If all the evidence comes out and he is proven guilty, then he needs to serve his time.
All right, Joe. We're going to move on. How hurt are the Yankees? So we're going to find out. We're going to discuss it when we come back. That's next on the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com.
Go to YesNetwork.com for the best Yankee blogs on the web. It's The Blob with Bob Lorenz, Keeping Up with the Jones with Kim Jones, The Pinstripe Bible with Steve Goldman, River Ave Blues, and much, much more. For wall-to-wall Yankees, it's YesNetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
Nick Swisher hit a big home run, and another big Yankee fan hit a home run 20 years ago today. Namely me, back in Princeton. I'll let John Sterling do the announcement. And the 1-0, a line drive hit deep into left field. That ball's going over the left fielder's head. Here comes Steve Nagy, the mad Hungarian, rounding second, rounding third. It's a Nagy knocker. And Highland Park adds 2 runs to the scoreboard.
And we're back. Big thanks to Steve Nagy there.
the mad Hungarian.
The mad Hungarian. He's rounding third. And
yeah, taking us back to his high school days, playing for the Highland Park Owls.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember. We played you guys twice a year when I was at good old South River High, the Rams.
Yes, I do not think, though, that was John Sterling. I'm pretty sure
I'm pretty sure that was Steve doing his awful impression of John Sterling, as I'm sure he would agree. But we appreciate the love, Steve. We appreciate you.
Always fun to hear from Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. But thank you for kicking off our Yankees segment as well. First thing we got to talk about, Joe, is the core four of the Yankees go on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and the core four become the sore four. Well, except for Derek Jeter. I mean,
Jeter needs to go into hiding right
knock
now.
Knock on wood, you know, we don't want anything to happen to the captain, obviously. But
this is a situation where I think the Yankees are just going to say nobody else goes on Sports Illustrated. I mean, that's where it's at. I mean, Posada's banged up. Now Pettit's banged up with the inflammation. From the, you know, that we saw in the
MRI,
he's going to miss a start. And, you know, Mariano Rivera, you know, missed 3 save opportunities over the Baltimore series. So hopefully he'll be back for the Boston series. But, yeah, like I said, Derek Jeter needs to go into hiding. I mean, I think they need to put him into federal witness protection program.
Little Henry Hill action.
Mm-hmm.
See, but this is why it's so intriguing and so important. That we're talking about this, it's because the Yankees start a stretch. Listen to this in May. They're at Boston, mm-hmm. then they're at Detroit for 4. Then they go back home to face Minnesota, Boston, and Tampa.
That's a big stretch.
That is a
probably
7-game stretch. They're both sets against Boston and Tampa are just 2 games apiece. Minnesota's 3. So that's a 7-game homestand, but it's against the Twins, the Red Sox, and the Rays.
Mm-hmm.
Then they start their Mets interleague act. It's not really interleague. It's just their first series with the Mets. That's in Queens. And the Mets are playing well. I mean, the Mets could give them some.
Very streaky. They're up and down, but you know.
And don't forget, it's at Citi Field, which is a cavernous ballpark, and we'll see what shakes out there. And then after they play the Mets at Citi Field, they have a day off on Monday the 24th. Then they go to Minnesota to their new field, Target Field, and they have three more with the Twins. So you're talking about a stretch.
Really 7, doesn't let 14, up till Cleveland.
17, yeah, 20 games. The next 20 games that the Yankees have until they face Cleveland at home on the 28th. With these four, and Posada, let's not forget about Posada. He's on the shelf. Who knows how much longer he'll be there, even though they said he was day-to-day. You have Mariano with the left side that he's having an issue with. Now, listen, it's early, but you need these guys. You definitely need these guys.
It's really amazing because the Yankees have actually given themselves a bit of a cushion here, being 11 games over 500. That was very important going into this stretch because if they started out like they started out last year and they had this stretch, the Yankees could be in trouble after these games.
This is going to be a very interesting 20 games to see, you know, how these reserve players who don't get a shot as much. And Curtis Granderson is out, so we're going to see Randy Wynn. Greg Golson came up from AAA Scranton.
Yeah,
he's another speedster.
Marcus Thames has been
ripping the cover off the ball, but it has to continue. These are the things that, you know, we're going to be looking for. And how much longer, Joe, how much longer can these starting pitchers keep this up?
That's
amazing. With the exception of Javier Vasquez, who I think will turn things around. Is it going to be Monday? Who knows? But I think Javi will start to turn the season around. But CeCe, AJ, Andy, and Phil Hughes have just been absolutely 100% lights out this year.
You know, it's funny you say that, too, because, you know, CeCe has battled in a couple of his starts, too. So we haven't even seen CeCe Sabathia's best stuff.
Right.
And as my good friend Mark Carrig of the Ledger noted yesterday when I spoke with him, he said AJ Burnett in his last start finally threw his first curveball.
Right. So, I saw him tweet that actually.
So if he's just coming around and starting to throw his most devastating out pitch at this point in the season, how much better could AJ Burnett get? I mean, 4-0, 1.99 ERA. You look at Sabathia, 4-1 with a 2.74. Pettit, 4-0 with a 2.08. Phil Hughes, 3-0 with a 1.44 ERA. That's
sick.
That is absolutely sick.
But with this stretch coming up, how much longer does it last? This is a stretch where we're going to find out a lot of things about this team. Everybody had a lot of off-season concerns, not bringing Damon back, not bringing Matsui back. Now, one of the guys you went out to get for, to replace Damon Matsui, Granderson, is on the shelf for a month.
You got to like this team's depth, though, Chris. I mean, Brett Gardner's been playing great. You know, you look at Jorge Posada's situation. Francisco Cervelli has been an animal out there, just hitting the ball like crazy.
And you can't
and
help
playing great defense.
And you can't help but root for this kid.
Oh,
you really
smile
can't.
On his face, youthful exuberance.
Yeah,
he is just awesome.
He is like a pinball in a pinball machine going off all of the. He just bounces everywhere. He's just so happy to be where he is.
You know, it's amazing. He's hitting .371. He's 13 for 35. He already has that triple from the other night, 6 RBI. And the other thing is he's quick. For a catcher, he's very quick. And the pitchers love pitching to him. He almost caught the CeCe Sabathia no-hitter. A.J. Burnett threw a gem in his last start, and Cervelli was behind the plate. And I'm not saying that, you know, Posada's not great behind the plate. We know what Posada does behind the plate. But this kid is kind of it's an injection of youth into this team.
That's you took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly. I mean, and Jorge has to be in the dugout saying to himself, "Wow, this kid reminds me a lot like me when I was coming up and when I was hungry and when I was going through everything he was going through." But as John and Susan say on a daily basis, when he's in the lineup, he always does something. He's always producing. And having these kids, and they're basically kids. And the other day, John made a great point on the radio. 7 of the 9 starters were homegrown Yankees.
That says it all right
now,
there.
Now, Timms and Johnson
have
come back.
Right.
They left and came back. But still, 7 of the 9 Yankees in that lineup were homegrown Yankees.
And the thing that really you got to love about this team is that, look, Cervelli, he said to me yesterday, I mean, he hit it right on the head when I spoke with him. He said, you know, I go out there and play like this is my last game. My mom told me to go out and cherish every moment that you have doing what you're doing. And he said, I go out there and I play because I don't know when my career is going to end. I'm 24 years old, and I play like this is my last game. That's the attitude that a Cervelli has. That's the attitude that a Brett Gardner has. Brett Gardner goes out there, and he plays like, you know, it's going to be his last game ever. I mean, you see it with these guys.
We can't leave out Ramiro Pena either, but let's go back to Brett Gardner for a second.
Yeah.
Now, this is a kid who, not this year, but last year when he won the center field job, everybody, and I mean everybody, except me, and listen, I've said this countless amounts of times. I know I'm not a scout. I know I'm not a baseball expert, but I have been around the game my entire life. And when I saw this kid in 2005 in Staten Island, he led off the game, had a bunt single. His next at bat, by the way, when you blink, he's at first base. So I was like, who the hell is this? I look at the roster, I see Brett Gardner. I came back to you at the second at bat, before I forget, Gapper. Triple, and it was the left center field gap. So the ball was in front of him. He still beat the throw to third.
Yeah.
What is it, rookie ball? Yeah, but I was just like, you know, with this kid's speed, if he could put some stuff together and he could figure it out as he moves along, he's going to be in the Bronx. And after one of the games, I went up to him in the dugout. I had a great seat. When we covered these games, I was the sideline reporter, quotation, but I was in the dugout. And when these guys got a hit, they scored a run, they came off the mound, I was there to give them a fist bump. They loved it. They loved having somebody from television in there. And I talked to them. And Gardner, after the game, I said, if you keep doing this, I'm going to see you across the river. And not 2006, but 2007, he got called up late in September. And as it happened, Kim Jones had something to do, and they needed me to go to the stadium to get some post-game sound. I walk in the locker room. There's Brett Gardner. He sees me. He smiles. I said, I told you. It doesn't take a genius.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was giving this kid like, oh, we can't. Who's Brett Gardner? Now, we've said it countless amounts of times on this podcast, but it's worth saying again. Everybody used to say, how are we going to win with Brett Gardner? Now people are saying, how are we going to win without him?
The man has 13 stolen bases this year. He is second in the American League to Juan Pierre, as noted by Jay-Z in Deja Vu. I used to run base like Juan Pierre. He has 15 stolen bases. Chris, it's a great point. I mean, Brett Gardner, he is a spark plug to this team. And we actually got a call from Brad Cunningham in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Let's take a listen.
Let's see what he has.
The virus is spreading, Joe.
Yes, it is.
Hello, this is Brad Cunningham calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Longtime Yankee fan, along with my whole family. Just wanted to say one of the most pleasant surprises that we have experienced this year watching this season is the evolving of Brett Gardner. He is just an awesome asset to this team. My question comment would be regarding the impending free agency of Carl Crawford, which the Yankees have been salivating over for years. Now, of course, there's going to be a bidding war over him. Lots of teams are going to want them for their outfield. But considering Brett Gardner's skills, decent defense, offense is getting better, and that speed of his, could he be an alternative than just going, throwing money, like the Yankees have done so often in the past, for an outfielder that then when he starts to de-evolve, we can't trade? I think we should stick with Brett Gardner, and that's my comment. If you have anything to add to it, I'd love to hear it. Great fan of the podcast. Can't wait to hear you guys again.
All right, Brad. Great points all the way around. As far as next year and all the rumors with the Yankees going out and trying to get a Carl Crawford, here's what you got in the outfield. You got Nick Swisher. He's under contract next year in 2011. He's scheduled to make $9 million in 2011. Now, as Joe and I discussed before we started taping, you could trade Nick.
Right.
And
There were rumors this offseason.
Right. But if the guy has any kind of a year like he had last year, why would you trade him? Unless you can get something pitching or something equal or greater in return for him, I wouldn't do it. But you could basically have an outfield of Carl Crawford, Curtis Granderson, and Brett Gardner. Tell me where a ball is going to land in that outfield.
Nowhere. And, you know, it's funny because at that point you have to really make a decision. Gardner's arm isn't that great, so I don't know if he'd be...
I don't think he'd play right.
Right. So, I mean, maybe then we talk about Granderson moving to right. He does have a bit of a better arm. And Gardner playing center. I mean, that's in the future. But I could certainly see the Yankees making a splash. I mean, 2010's not even over yet. We're
right,
talking about
right.
it. But,
hey, you know, well, Brad brought it up, and Brad, we want to...
No,
we aim
know,
to please.
Absolutely. And you know what? That's the beauty of baseball. It's not just about this season. It's about the future. And that's what you have to love about Yankee fans. They're so passionate. They're thinking past even the 2010 season. And Brad is a prime example of that. And Brad, really, what I think is, you know, you can look forward to an offseason where the Yankees are going to be heavily bidding for both Cliff Lee and Carl Crawford and have a very good shot of landing both of them. But by the same
Which is
token,
scary.
I think that Joe Girardi is a huge fan of Brett Gardner, and a situation, if that situation does arise, and they do sign Carl Crawford, I think, you know, Nick Swisher's not going to want to take a back seat, so they would probably trade him.
And I could see that happening as well. Either way, the Yankee outfield next year, I think the Yankee outfield for years to come is pretty much set, especially if they get Carl Crawford. As I watch a Yankees batting practice today promo, you saw my face for about 2.3 seconds.
there it is.
Hey, there I am again. Woo! All
but,
right.
You know, Chris, you know what you really have to like about this Yankee squad is that, you know, they're doing this right now.
It is like deep end of pool.
well, you know, they... they're really
it's the
doing
caffeine,
this.
Man.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
They're doing this right now without Mark Teixeira and Alex Rodriguez. Mm.
That's a fair point. And you know, if they were losing, the onus would be squarely on their shoulders. By the way,
Look at it. I mean,
Mark Teixeira and Alex Rodriguez should be sending flowers and thank you cards to Robbie Cano right now.
Just to show you, I mean, Mark Teixeira's 178, 2 home runs, 14 RBI, and Alex Rodriguez. Who, you know what? He's not playing like he's at 100%. I really don't think he's 100% right now. He's at 253, 2 home runs. He still has 17 RBI. But Cano is really the story. Cano, 362, 9 home runs, 21 RBI, 23 runs scored.
Unbelievable.
If he continues on this pace, that is a superstar MVP pace.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know... Everybody said this from Don Mattingly back when Cano first came up. He said he has the stuff to be a batting title winner, and it's taken him a couple of years. I remember when he first came up, his first series was down in St. Pete, and Chris Russo used to be on Yes, as everybody knows, and Russo used to say, he used to mispronounce the guy's name. He was disrespecting him. He was just having fun,
right.
But he called him Cano. I bet you a dog knows how to pronounce his name now.
Yes. Yeah, and... The other thing is Matsui did have a hot start.
Hey, got this guy Cano.
But you look at Nick Johnson. Nick Johnson's hitting 171 right now, and he's their DH. So it's
if we've seen the worst from Johnson, Teixeira, and A-Rod,
can only get better.
Who are the 2, 3, and 4 hitters in this lineup? If they start turning it on and all turning it on at the same time, opposing teams beware.
Yeah.
But this stretch, as I said, they're going through. The Boston rotation, they're going to get Beckett, Buchholz, and Lester in Boston. Then they got Detroit, which is no, you know.
Pushover.
That's no pushover. Then you got Minnesota.
And during that series, they're going to pitch Javi Vasquez, who's
right.
going to miss the Boston
right.
series. And probably
Pettit's out.
Mitre or Aceves is going to be
right.
in there for Pettit, so.
How about Big Ace getting the save the other day?
Yeah. Well, thank God, because no one else in the bullpen can save that game.
I don't know what's wrong with David Robertson, but...
Yeah, you know...
Maybe teams have figured him out. I mean, he's just good old country hardball throwing two-seamers and four-seamers, because that's what he was blowing people away last year. And yeah. It looks like they're just sitting fastball, and they're destroying it, especially
10 earned runs in six in the third.
Wieters yesterday just crushed it. Yeah. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to wrap this up, put a nice little bow tie on it. We're going to talk about the fans in Philly. I didn't think it was going to blow up the way it did after this kid got tased, but it did, and it's podcast worthy. And when we come back, Joe and I will discuss here on the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. We're back right after this. Don't go anywhere.
Want to see what everyone's talking about? Check out the two-time Emmy Award-winning video content at YesNetwork.com. It's the best in Yankees web shows, podcasts, and features. Only at YesNetwork.com.
Want to have your voice heard? Leave a comment or question on the Yankees and anything else sports-related for Chris at 646-487-3668. And now, back to Off the Wall.
Who wants an orange whip? Orange whip? Orange whip? Three orange whips!
Oh, the immortal John Candy. How I miss him so.
Orange whip? Orange whip? Three orange whips!
Oh, what a great film. Anyway, we're back here on the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. If you want to join us and get your voice heard as Steve, the Mad Hungarian Nagy, and Brad Cunningham from Charlotte, North Carolina, on in our second segment. You can give us a buzz at 646-487-3668, or you could email us if you want to be seen and not heard at offthewall@yesnetwork.com, as Andrick Toscano does all the time. Andrick, we appreciate the listening every week to the podcast, and if it wasn't for you out there, we wouldn't be doing this in here. So having said that, let's start our last segment and just touch on these complete and utter morons in Philadelphia, and I'll say it, I don't care. Listen, I blogged about this earlier in the week, and I'll tell you about the couple stories about me in Philadelphia. I went to college in South Jersey, which is basically the greater Philadelphia area. I was a New York fan in a Philadelphia pretty much jungle of sports fans. I learned very early on when I went to college down there, if I went to see a New York team, whether it be the Giants, the Rangers, the Knicks, or the Yankees, when interleague play started in 1997. At the Vet, by the way. Yeah, I didn't go to the Link. I didn't go to Citizens Bank Park. I went to the Vet to see the Giants in the 700 level, which is an experience. Bring your kids. Oh, wait, you can't because they knocked it down. Thank God. Anyway, I almost got in a fight when I was at the Giant game because I protested a flag. All I was doing was rooting for my team. I wasn't being obnoxious. I just said, oh, that's not pass interference. And the row in front of me stood up and challenged me to fisticuffs. I think if my ex-girlfriend wasn't there at the time, I would have been in a little bit of trouble. But she kind of got the situation under control and calmed everybody down and told me to shut my mouth if I wanted to walk out of there with all of my teeth. Then fast forward a couple years to 1997 when interleague play started. I go down there. I bought tickets to all three Yankees-Phillies games. The Yankees lost all three of those, by the way. The Phillies swept them. And I'm in the bathroom, and this kid could have been more than 8 years old. I'm in my Yankee jacket, the dugout jacket for 1997, which was hot, by the way. And he comes up to me, an eight-year-old kid, and says, Yankees bleeping suck! Really? You're eight. That's how they train him in Philly. So did it shock me that this moron ran onto the field? No, but it shocked him when he got tased by that police officer, who I want to applaud. And if you think he did the wrong thing, you're absolutely 100% wrong, because the players lauded that.
Yeah.
Players did. Because the players, especially in these times, Joe, do not want any moron running out onto the field. They don't know what they have. Listen, maybe I'm a nervous Nelly, but you never know with these bombs that people strap to themselves what's going to happen next.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And look, there are a lot of fans out there that, you know, at games, they're crazy. There are a lot of people out there. If you look at the New York Times, the Times Square guy who just put his car. I mean, anything can happen.
Yeah.
Anything can happen these days. And, you know, you never know.
Ask Monica Seles.
Yeah, I know.
Ask Gamboa, the first base coach for the Royals, which I forgot. Mike Vaccaro brought it up from the New York Post. I forgot that.
Yeah.
And he had a big article about this a couple days back. And he reminded me of that. And they those two people, the father and son, they beat the hell out of him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's...
It's scary.
It's very scary.
It's not like, you know, the 60s and, you know, 70s, the free love times where you just ran on the field and you know, gave your favorite, like, women were giving players, Morgana was giving kisses. It's not like that anymore. You don't know what the intent is. You don't know what's going on.
I'm not saying that...
It's just scary.
I'm not saying that all fans should be, you know, all fans that are loud and obnoxious. You know, you go to a game and you're going to get your fans that are going to be very passionate about the game. Maybe throw out a couple of, you know, curses. And that stuff actually doesn't bother me because, to me, that's just the, you know, the competitive spirit of a fan. But for a fan to be that extreme and to run onto the field and possibly, you know, you don't know what's going to happen, cause harm to a player, it is completely... out of control, and they did the right thing.
And if you think, you know, it's like that everywhere, it's not. It's not. Because, Joe, you and I were at the World Series. We were in the bleachers, watching behind the bleachers. There were Philly fans there.
Mm-hmm.
There were Yankee fans there.
Mm-hmm.
The Yankee fans...
They were doing roll call. Remember that?
Well, that was in Philly. I'm talking about New York.
Oh, yeah.
The Yankee fans were playfully heckling the Philly fans. There was no... malicious intent. There was no name calling. It was just fun. But if that was reversed, if you go to Philly, you put blinders on, and you know, especially if you're wearing your team's colors, you just put blinders on and hope no one says anything to you. Because we were trying to do interviews with Yankee fans at Citizens Bank Park after Game 4, I believe.
You remember how bad the
and we had to edit mostly everything out because there were Philly fans walking down the
F-bombs all over the place. Yeah,
it's just, you know.
Well, look, you know, I have a Philadelphia story myself. When I was 11 years old or 10 or 11 years old, my father took me to.
It has to be a Giant game, right?
It was a Cardinals game, Cardinals Eagles game.
Wow.
Jim McMahon was the quarterback for the Eagles at that time. And Cunningham was out and McMahon was in the game. Or was he with the Cardinals? No, he was with the Eagles.
No, Eagles.
He was with the Eagles. I just remember Jim McMahon playing in that game. And my father and I go to the game and I put on my Lawrence Taylor jersey. We're talking about LT. I might as well, you know.
Right.
You know, I have my Lawrence Taylor jersey on. And my dad actually worked in Camden at that time and got... box seats at Veterans Stadium. So that's, you know, we're in a secluded area. We weren't out with the masses. But as we're walking to the box area...
You're 10 years old.
I was 10 years old.
Okay.
I had...
I just wanted to ram that point on before I know
fans,
what's coming on. Yeah.
Eagles fans get in my face with my father there and tell me that I have a lot of F and B, that if I was any older... they would kick my expletive.
Yes.
And they said that my father, they're lucky that they didn't kick my dad's bleep for disgracing Philadelphia like that wearing the jersey. As it turns out, as I was going up the elevator to go to the box area, in the same area in Veterans Stadium, in the box area, was where the Cardinals coaches would be upstairs calling down the plays. And... as it turns out, I took the elevator. It was me, my father, and Joe Bugle.
Okay.
So Joe Bugle was in the elevator with us. Looks at me with the Lawrence Taylor jersey. And he goes, did you get harassed? And I said, yeah, I got harassed. And he goes, yeah. He goes, how old are you? I go, you know, I'm 10. And he goes, let me tell you something, kid. You have a lot of B. So that's it's a great story. It's a great story.
Oh, God, that is tremendous. And I think we're going to end it right there because that was a great way to end it. Oh, God. But both of us, I mean, if it had to happen again, I would call for the tasing. I mean, you have to set a precedent. That's what I'm trying to say. That's what my blog says. You could check that out at yesnetwork.com. And you could check Joe out at yesnetwork.com. Has a blog, Meet at the Bat. Also, you could follow us on Twitter. Don't forget, Joe is...
I'm at Joe Auriemma, yes. J-O-E-A-U-R-I-E-M-M-A.
Just like yes. The UConn coach, and I am at Chris Sheeran, yes. One more thing, go ahead.
I just want to throw in the fact of the week. This comes from Stats Inc.
Okay.
Stats Inc. says, through May 5th, the Yankees have scored in 37.1% of innings, and that's the highest in Major League Baseball, while the Astros have scored in 19.2%, which is the lowest in baseball.
All
stat
right.
of the week.
There you have it. Stat of the week for Joe Auriemma. I'm Chris Sheeran, and we'll see you next week with another Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. When the world is on your shoulder, gotta straighten up your act and boogie down. If you can't hang with the feeling, then there ain't no room for you in this part of town. 'Cause we're the party people night and day, living crazy, that's the only way. So tonight, gotta leave the 9-to-5 up on the shelf. Just enjoy yourself, groove, let the madness and the music get to you, like it's so bad at all, you live it off the wall, like they say.